House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 1st, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 3:16 p.m. Today we have present Representative Prox, Representative Wright, Representative Carrick, Vice Chair Ruffridge, and myself, Chair Sumner. The staff that will be assisting us today are Kevin Allen with House Records, Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO, and Serena Hackenmiller, my staff and committee aide to House Labor and Commerce. On today's agenda, we have two bill hearings. We will start with HB 298, alcohol warning signs on licensed premises, from Representative Gray's office. And we will hear public testimony on HB 150, residential building codes, a bill sponsored by my office. Starting with HB 298, alcohol warning signs on licensed premises, Representative Gray, will you and your staff please approach the committee, put your names on the record, and begin.
Thank you, Chair Sumner. For the record, my name is Andrew Gray, and I represent House District 20, the UMed District in Anchorage. Thank you to the committee for hearing the Alcoholic Beverage and Cancer Act. The bill in front of you today, House Bill 298, will inform Alaskans that alcohol use can cause cancer, including colon and breast cancers. There's been broad scientific consensus for decades that the consumption of alcohol significantly increases the risk of seven different cancers. The relationship between alcohol and cancer was first documented by the World Health Organization in 1987. In 2023, the World Health Organization issued the following statement, quote, "When it comes to alcohol consumption, there is no safe amount of alcohol that does not affect health," end quote. The 2020 American Cancer Society guidelines advise complete avoidance of alcohol, specifically for cancer prevention due to an increased risk of cancer evident with consumption of less than one drink per day. That's the American Cancer Society 2020 guidelines. Alcohol-related cancers affect tens of thousands of Americans each year. Despite the long-standing medical fact that alcohol increases cancer risk, there has not been an accompanying change in public perception about the risks associated with alcohol consumption. Some surveys from the National Institute of Health even indicate that 10% of adults believe alcohol consumption decreases risk. This is simply not true. All alcohol is carcinogenic. The more you drink, the greater your risk. But any amount of alcohol, even a small amount, is still carcinogenic. House Bill 298 addresses this gap in public health knowledge by changing the text on a required warning sign at the point of sale for alcohol. The sentence that will be added is, quote, "Alcohol use can cause cancer, including breast and colon cancers." This has precedent in South Korea and Ireland. The bill was amended in House Health and Social Services Committee to actually reduce the total number of signs required at businesses at points of sale for alcohol, whereas before there were three required signs. If this bill passes, the number of signs required will now be two. One outside the business, warning of the need to be over 21 to go inside, and the risk of serving alcohol to a minor. This is combining two signs as they currently exist. And one inside the premises that warns of the risk of drinking alcohol while pregnant, and also the risk of cancer, which will be added to that sign. This bill is a pro-business bill now, lowering the burden of signs on businesses. I drink alcohol. I am not a teetotaler. The goal of this bill is not to restrict access to alcohol. The goal of this bill is to empower all Alaskans to make informed decisions about the products they consume. Alcohol increases your risk of cancer. The more you drink, the higher your risk. But any amount increases the risk of cancer, particularly for breast and colon cancers, two very common cancers. My hope is that this bill will inform Alaskans of alcohol's cancer risk so that they can reduce their risk if they so choose. And I know that there are those out there who, once they are informed, will change their behavior. A decrease in risk will result in a decrease in Alaska cancer cases. This will reduce our healthcare costs, but more importantly, this will save Alaskan lives. My staff, David Song, will now talk through the sectional analysis and walk us through a short PowerPoint, and then we have a couple of subject matter experts online for testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, David Song, staff to Representative Gray. So, as most of you have already heard, this bill is pretty simple and straightforward. The underlying bill amends AS04.21.065B to change the text on one of the signs that alcohol vendors are already required to display at the point of sale. Currently, the sign reads, "Warning, drinking alcoholic beverages such as beer, wine, wine coolers, and distilled spirits or smoking cigarettes can cause birth defects." The underlying bill would change the text to read, "Warning, alcohol use during pregnancy can cause birth defects. Alcohol use can cause cancer, including breast and colon cancers." And as Representative said, I'm going to walk through the summary of changes from the Health and Social Services Committee So in section one, it amends AS 0421.065A to change the total number of warning signs vendors of alcohol are required to display on their premises from a total of three to a total of two. Section two amends AS 0421.065B to consolidate two currently required alcohol warning signs into one sign. Currently, those two signs read, warning, a person who provides alcoholic beverages to a person under 21 years of age, if convicted under AS 04.16.051, can be imprisoned for up to 5 years and fined up to $50,000. And the other reads, warning, an unaccompanied person under 21 years of age who enters these premises in violation of law may under AS 04.16.049E be civilly liable for damages of $1,500. So those two signs will be consolidated into one sign. Okay, so now we're going to go through this brief presentation that most of you have seen already. But for those who haven't, we're going to provide some background about HB 298 and the issues it's trying to address. So like Representative Gray said, it is a medical fact that there's a causal link between alcohol consumption and cancer, and this has been well established for decades. This applies to all types of alcohol, including red wine. Tens of thousands of cases of cancer can be attributed annually to alcohol consumption just in North America. And alcohol consumption is the third highest modifiable risk factor for cancer. It doesn't have to be major binge drinking that causes this risk. According to a 2017 Surgeon General's report, even moderate levels of drinking increases risk for breast cancer. And in that report, a moderate level of drinking was defined as having up to 1.5 drinks per day. So this is the World Health Organization's data on cancers attributable to alcohol. So according to the World Health Organization, 60,000 cases of cancer in 2020 were attributable to alcohol consumption in North America. Of those cases, 26.3% were breast cancer, 27% were colorectal cancer, and 16.8% were liver cancer. And as you can see, there are also significant numbers of cases for oral and pharyngeal cancers as a result of alcohol consumption. So one of the major issues we have with prevention is that there's a major information gap relating to alcohol consumption and cancer risk. As of 2020, studies show that only 31.2% of U.S. adults are aware of the cancer risk for liquor consumption, 24.9% of U.S. adults are aware of the cancer risk for beer consumption, 20.3% of U.S. adults are aware of the cancer risk for wine consumption, and 10% of U.S. adults falsely believe that wine consumption decreases cancer risk, and this is unequivocally false. It does not. However, when it comes to different kinds of carcinogens, Americans are aware of the risks. For example, nearly 90% of Americans know that there's a link between tobacco use and cancer. So in other words, the warning labels that connect a product with cancer do work in terms of increasing public awareness. So what does HB 298 do? It's simple. It changes one of the signs that's required at the point of sale for alcohol from the text on the left to the text on the right. And it keeps the information about alcohol use and birth defects and adds text that says alcohol use can cause cancer, including breast and colon cancers. And also stated in the summary of changes, two existing signs will be consolidated into one. So this is not a new idea. This has been implemented in other countries. Ireland and South Korea, for instance, have passed legislation to require cancer warning labels on the alcohol containers. So here's the example of the Irish warning label, which clearly states the relationship between alcohol use causing cancer and liver disease. So our bill doesn't go as far as Ireland's. We're just requiring a sign at the point of sale. And so ultimately, this is just a simple and cost-effective way to reduce the aforementioned information gap. And this is pretty easy to implement. Vendors do not need to put up an additional sign. It just replaces one sign and consolidates two existing signs. And so in conclusion, Alaskans deserve to be fully informed about the health risks of all products they consume, including alcoholic beverages. And HB 298 is an easy way to provide consumers with that information. So thanks for listening, and we ask for the committee support.
OK,
Okay, and let the record reflect that Representative Sadler and Representative Fields joined us at 3:18 p.m. I guess we will take questions. Representative Fields.
Thank you. I think I had a question through the chair for AMCO staff, if they're online.
Let's see. We have Joan Wilson online for questions. Director of AMCO.
Thanks. Through the chair, Ms. Wilson, I saw that the bill picked up a fiscal note, and I was just curious for a little more background on that in the previous committee. I'd been trying to reduce the burden of signage and wonder, was that effort maybe not successful, or just a little more background? I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, initially, the bill, I had written a fiscal note for about $9,000 to I think we had a couple of small regulatory changes to just incorporate the changes in sign, and that was something I thought, although it would take time, we could fit within our budget. And then there was the cost of changing a new sign, and that reached a total of about $9,000, but I believe I was instructed anything less than $10,000 I should try to absorb. Now that we're changing two signs, it amounts to about $20,000, and my office administrator reminded me that with remote alcohol licensees in remote Alaska, we often have to mail those signs to them, and that added about $5,000 in potential postage. So I'm sorry one of the effects was giving this bill a fiscal note, but I do think it's small, and I'm often nickeling and diming my budget to make sure that we can fit within the restraints, even though we're all program receipts. And I didn't think it was fair to continue to take another hit, if that makes sense, sir.
Through the chair, thank you for that explanation.
Representative Kerr.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm just curious, why legislation? Is this something that the ABC board could require through regulation, or is this something that has to be done through a statutory change?
Is that a question for me, Mr. Chair, or for the sponsor?
For either.
For the bill sponsor.
Okay. Thank you. Through the chair, to Representative Carrick. I believe often in the legislature, there are things that could be done by a particular board or commission. However, it often helps to give them guidance. The legislature needs to give them guidance, or else they'll continue practices as they currently exist. But I don't want to speak for Ms. Wilson, if she wanted to make all of these changes without legislation, I'd be interested to hear her response.
Mr. Chair, I could not make the changes. The statute as written requires three signs and requires the verbiage of it. So the ABC board must interpret the statute according to its constraints and can't adopt a regulation that doesn't implement the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Song. I believe I heard you say that the linkage between cancer and alcohol has been known for decades. Is that what you said?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, yes. Okay.
But and I guess I also, well, back in the 60s, was watching TV commercials about tobacco and smoking and cancer risks. That's been a 60-year effort. It's not just labels. So I don't know if the efficacy of putting labels in bars is going to have the same effect as that 60-year multimedia, multifaceted, multilateral effort on tobacco. But I guess my question is kind of rhetorical, but kind of serious, too. If there's been a linkage between alcohol and cancer for decades, why haven't people heard about it? And maybe some people have, but why has it not become more known societally?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, I appreciate that the question is for my staff. I would like, if possible, to have our subject matter experts who spend all of their waking hours on this very issue, if that's okay, give the answer and their testimony.
I think we will go on to invited testimony at this time. We have Dr. Tim Namey. If you're online, please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Oh, hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Please proceed.
Okay. Sure. I'm Tim Namey. I'm a physician from the States, but I currently am the director of the Canadian Institute for Substance Use Research. And a lot of thanks for inviting me. As has been covered, you know, the relationship of alcohol with some health conditions is a bit controversial, but the relationship with cancer is not. I would say in response to the question that was just posed is why aren't more people aware of it? It's because that in the States, there hasn't been a lot of signage or efforts to educate the public like there has been with tobacco. So I guess this is, you know, a small step in that direction. As has been mentioned, alcohol is causally related to between 7 and different 10 types of cancers. Breast cancer is a biggie, as mentioned, colon cancer, liver cancer, and then cancers of the mouth, the voice box, and the esophagus, the swallowing tube, and probably the stomach as well. And again, it does start with the relationship is the more you drink, the higher your risk. It doesn't just start at very high levels. That's been mentioned. It is classified as a type 1 or a class 1 carcinogen. Carcinogen means a substance or a chemical that causes cancer. It's pretty difficult to be designated as a class 1 carcinogen. So alcohol is keeping the company of some really toxic chemicals like benzene, tobacco smoke, and asbestos. To be classified as a type 1 carcinogen, you have to have compelling evidence from studies that people that drink more alcohol are more at risk of that disease. Then you need to show in the test tube in the lab that you can essentially cause cancerous changes in cells by exposing them to ethanol. And the final criteria you need to be a class 1 carcinogen is that you can induce cancer in laboratory animals by exposing them to the same compound. So, alcohol has been a class 1 carcinogen for about 35 years. About 3.5% to 5% of all cancer deaths in the United States are caused by alcohol. So it's a pretty big ticket item. I'm not sure. I didn't do the math to figure out how many that would be for Alaskans. Now, of course, the whole purpose of this is to inform people. Part of having a, you know, legal substance like alcohol is that it, you know, we have, it's allowed to be sold, but then on the flip side, it should be regulated and people should at least be informed, so they can make decisions. And I would just mention as a closing point that if we think about how we, you know, we label cigarettes, how we label cannabis, it's a lot more than we do for alcohol. For alcohol, we don't have much information. And if I as always tell people, if I go to the store and I buy a can of peas, I know how much calcium is in there. I know, you know, how many calories in there, and I know what a serving size is, and we don't get any of that for alcohol. So I think it's just, you know, part of a common sense effort to let people be aware of health risks and then make, you know, make their own informed decisions in the context of a free society. And I'll pause there in the interest of time and happy to take questions later or now, whenever you want.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Chameleon, when was alcohol classified as a class 1 carcinogen, please?
Oh, this is Tim Namey. In the 1980s, I'm not sure the exact year. I think it was 86 or 87.
Okay, my apologies, sir. I'm sorry, I was looking at the screen. I've had old notes. My apologies, Mr. Namey.
Okay, no problem.
About 1987, you said, or?
I think it was somewhere in the mid-1980s.
Okay, very good.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Next. Sure. Did somebody say something? No? Okay. Thank you. Next, we have Thomas Gramillion. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hey, this is Thomas Gramillion. I'm a director of food policy at Consumer Federation of America. Also, a former, proud former clerk of the Alaska Supreme Court. I'm based in Washington, D.C. now. America is a nonprofit organization established in 1968 to advance the consumer interest through research, education, and advocacy. And as I mentioned in my previous testimony, My interest in an alcohol cancer warning came about through CFA's decades-long advocacy to bring alcohol labeling into alignment with other foods and beverages with respect to basic nutrition facts, ingredients, and allergens. And I became aware of the link between alcohol and cancer that Representative Gray and Mr. Song have discussed. And I also became aware of the very low public awareness of this link, which frankly did not surprise me because I myself have been so ignorant of the science. But in addition to the survey that Mr. Song talked about, there's you know many others that have shown consistently fewer than half of consumers identify alcohol as a cancer risk. As I researched, I learned about the experiment in the Yukon province of Canada in which cancer warning labels were placed on alcoholic beverages and were associated with a statistically significant drop in sales. And I came to the conclusion that alcohol cancer warnings are a powerful public policy tool precisely because alcohol cancer risk represents such a high significant health burden on the one hand, and the awareness of that risk is so low. And so CFA supports both federal alcohol labeling reform. We've petitioned the Federal Tax and Trade Bureau, Alcohol, Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, to act on updating the warning labels that are on the alcoholic beverages. And we also support state laws like HB 298 that will require point-of-sale cancer warnings for alcohol. On our website, you can find this paper entitled State and Local Public Policy Options for Raising Awareness of Alcohol Cancer Risk. And in it, I've listed an extensive bibliography of academic research articles and presented the basic argument for bills like HB 298. And in particular, I argue that even if we accept claims that moderate drinking produces cardiovascular or other health benefits for some consumers, and there's growing evidence that suggests we should not accept those claims, but even if we do, the cancer risk associated with moderate drinking is large enough to outweigh those claimed health benefits for many consumers, such as cancer survivors, such as women with the BRCA mutation, who according to one study, have a higher or a greater risk of alcohol-induced breast cancer, younger consumers who have higher cancer risk relative to cardiovascular disease risk. Different consumers have different risk profiles, and bills like HB 298 are important to give those consumers the information they need to make rational choices, give them agency. I also believe that raising awareness of alcohol cancer risk is important because the evidence indicates that doing so will decrease over alcohol sales, which will in turn decrease alcohol abuse and alcohol-related harms. There's good evidence that when you reduce alcohol sales, you also reduce abuse. And finally, I want to point out, as I did the last time I gave testimony, that point-of-sale warning signs, not just warning labels like they had in the Yukon or like in other jurisdictions, these warning signs have a record of success. Point-of-sale warning signs on the dangers of drinking while pregnant, were adopted in Alaska and nearly half of the other states in the Union back in the late 90s. Those are associated with significantly reduced rates of fetal alcohol syndrome. I think it's 11% fewer women report drinking while pregnant in those states that have passed the laws compared to comparable states. So while it may seem like no one is paying attention to these warning signs, they do help to get the message out and slowly change the public mindset over time. And, I hope Alaska can blaze the trail for other states to follow suit by passing this bill and help consumers make more informed choices. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next we have, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Gramillion. I don't know if the Consumer Federation has any information. Just curious if you know how much alcohol is sold in bars, taverns versus retail sales. Have you information on that?
I don't. Yeah. No, I couldn't tell you.
Sure. I guess sometime I want to ask Ms. Wilson from Marijuana Control Board, but later on. Thank you.
Okay. Next Thank you. Next we have Tiffany Hall. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi there. Thank you so much. Can y'all hear me?
We can hear you. Please proceed.
Wonderful. Thank you. My name is Tiffany Hall. I'm the CEO of Recover Alaska, an organization that works to reduce excessive alcohol use and harms across the state. Thank you so much for the opportunity to provide testimony, Chair Sumner, and members of the committee. I'm sorry to not be there in person, but I have my three-month-old son here with me, so I really appreciate being able to call in. Recover Alaska is fully in support of this bill. I'm sorry some of you heard this in the prior committee, but to the benefit of those folks who weren't there, I'll be a little bit repetitive. And I'm going to do a little bit of numbers gymnastics, but cancer is the leading cause of death in Alaska. Alcohol is the third leading modifiable cause of cancer. And alcohol is related to 9 of the top 10 causes of death in Alaska. So as these signs reduce consumption, whether it be through cancer death or the other 8 leading causes of death in Alaska, this signage will save lives here in our state. There's no question that alcohol causes cancer. There's no credible authority that disputes the consensus that even moderate alcohol consumption increases cancer risk. But unfortunately, that's largely unknown. Less than half the population knows that alcohol causes cancer, and it's not even very well known among medical professionals. Knowledge is power. Public awareness is critical here. Alcohol is different from other things. It's not an ordinary commodity. It is addictive. It is a class 1 carcinogen. It directly causes cancer, and most people don't know that. I really love the simple language of this bill and the efficiency of adding it to an existing sign, removing undue burden from the industry, and putting the information in front of a very relevant audience. This bill does not restrict alcohol sales or consumption in any way. It's about freedom of information. It simply informs the public of the facts. And yes, we would do well to also have a robust public health campaign working alongside this sign change. As Representative Sadler mentioned regarding tobacco, that will be a decades-long effort that will take many hundreds of thousands of dollars each year. So starting with this very low-cost, low-fiscal-note bill is a really great place to begin. And that brings us to costs. Taxpayers are losing money on alcohol. In Alaska, alcohol brings in about $111 million every year. However, alcohol costs Alaska $2.4 billion every year, a large percentage of which are healthcare costs, as well as absenteeism from work and lost productivity from early death. So to do the math, that's about 5% of what alcohol costs us. The revenue is about 5% of what it costs us. So again, this very efficient, small fiscal note bill will reduce consumption, and it'll be a financial win for the state. Finally, I would just like to say that cancer is one of many harms related to alcohol. We have seen examples of this type of notice working to decrease consumption in other places, and any reduction in alcohol consumption will lower the rates of some of those other harms. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Ms. Hall, you mentioned the benefit to the state that the alcohol brought in $111 million and that cost the state $2.4 billion. I'd like to probe those numbers a bit. Is that $111 million solely a measurement of alcohol taxation, or is that an other measure?
That includes, it's about almost $40 million in alcoholic beverages tax to the state, so that doesn't include local taxes. To be transparent about that, it also includes almost $72 million in private sector job wages. Okay. And those are 2018 numbers.
Okay. Okay. And you mentioned a follow-up. You said that cancer is just one of the health risks, if I may paraphrase, of alcohol. What are some of the others?
Stroke, liver disease. Sorry, I just had it in front of me, wouldn't you know it, and I clicked away. Here we go. Our top 10 causes of death here in Alaska are cancer, heart disease, COVID-19, accidents, stroke, chronic lower respiratory diseases, suicide, chronic liver disease or cirrhosis of the liver, diabetes, and Alzheimer's.
And follow up, then, which of those are alcohol-related? Or what does the alcohol contribute to those death, to those causes of death?
You know, as I was reading this, I realized that the list I was looking at before with the 9 out of 10 didn't include COVID. But I know that COVID is also shown to be linked to alcohol. I don't know, but I don't know anything about causal or related there, so I can't speak to that one. But alcohol contributes to cancer, heart disease, accidents, stroke, suicide, liver disease. I would have to get back to you about diabetes and Alzheimer's.
Could you expound a little bit on the alcohol COVID link?
Can we have the doctor speak? There's a doctor.
Yeah, that would be great. I actually, I can't speak to the link with COVID. I'm realizing that my 9 out of 10 stat was before these new numbers came out listing COVID as one of our top causes of death. So I'm sorry, I can't.
I'm happy to do that if you want.
Yeah, Dr. Namy, if you would like.
Namy, yeah. Yeah, so well, COVID isn't the cause of death that it was a couple of years ago, but there's a strong relationship between alcohol and COVID. So alcohol at moderate and high doses like suppresses the immune system. So people who drink heavily or have an alcohol use disorder are more susceptible to getting COVID and were about 3 times more likely to die from COVID compared to people without an alcohol use disorder. And then also, of course, alcohol played a important role in spreading COVID because, you know, obviously when people are drinking, I think there's an interesting study. For every additional drink you consume in the presence of others, you get like 4 centimeters closer to them. And, you know, of course, people weren't, you know, can't be masking and they're, you know, yelling at each other in crowded things. So a lot of the big super spreader events for COVID involved sort of alcohol-related things. And then Ms. Price did a very nice job summarizing alcohol. And alcohol is an important contributor. She wasn't sure about dementia. To dementia, and it's one of the leading preventable causes of dementia. People who engage in binge drinking in their teens and 20s have a 4 times elevated risk of having dementia later in life. I mean, alcohol is a neurotoxin, so that's that one. And then for diabetes, alcohol is not really a risk factor at low doses, but at high doses, it's a big one. So just to round out those, and sorry to speak out of turn. Thanks.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Alcohol is a risk factor, alcohol use for certain things, just like the doctor was just mentioning. I think it's also worth noting on the slide deck that was provided by the bill sponsor, alcohol is the 3rd highest modifiable cancer risk factor. I think the number 1 and 2, the doctor can correct me, are smoking and exercise. Smoking and excess weight. Put that in correct terms. But I just wanted to point out that risk factor doesn't mean direct cause. It's elevated risk. I just think there's...
Through the chair to Representative Carrick, or actually, can we have Dr. Namy speak to that? Because it's actually a causal connection.
I think he already has, but Dr. Namy, if you'd like to readdress that.
Yeah, I think everyone's right. So you can... A causal connection means that it's more than an association, that alcohol can cause cancer. But, of course, not every case of breast cancer is caused by alcohol, right? It causes a fraction of them, probably upwards of 20%. And people who are drinking more, it's a higher risk that their alcohol was – that alcohol, in fact, caused their cancer. But, So that's why it's also termed a risk factor, but a risk factor that is causally related. So in other words, not everyone who drinks gets cancer, and not every type of cancer is caused by alcohol, but there's a strong relationship, and it's not just a coincidental relationship. That's where the causal part comes in.
Okay, thank you. So seeing no other questions before the committee, we're going to set this bill aside. Thank you, Representative Gray. We'll take a 5-minute at ease and then come back for HB 150. All right, we're back on the record. Last on the agenda today is House Bill 150, Residential Building Code, sponsored by my office. We heard this bill last week, and today we're going to hear a public testimony on HB 150. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? No? Okay, we'll go online. We have Eric Visser. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Sorry, did you say Eric Visser?
Yeah.
Said unmuted, right? You were speaking. Okay.
Mr. Visser.
That sounds great. My name's Eric Visser from Anchorage. I'm a member and past president of the Anchorage Home Builders Association, as well as the Alaska State Home Builders Association. Thank you, members of the committee and Mr. Chairman. Establishing a statewide building code has been on the list of priorities for the State Home Builders Association for decades. Through the work of the association and feedback from stakeholders, I can honestly say that HB 150 is one of the best bills we've seen to date. The critical problem we're trying to solve is protecting consumers and from contractors outside of jurisdictions that don't already have an adopted code. This bill strikes the right balance of personal freedom and regulation in the industry. It allows owner builders to construct their homes in a way that they see fit and exempts recreational cabins. But this also requires general contractors with a residential endorsement to build to a minimum standard, which gives consumers something to fall back on if they run into problems with construction of their homes. Another reason why I say this is the best bill yet is because it establishes an Alaska State Building Code Council. This code council is made up of 11 public members, with six of them being required to have residential endorsements. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the code development process on the national level, but sometimes there's code proposals from the lower 48 that just aren't going to work in Alaska. The Alaska State Building Code Council gives residents and the state, residents of the state and local industry experts the ability to review the updates to the national code and create local amendments that strike the right balance between housing affordability, safety, and the resiliency of homes. I ask that you support the passage of HB 150 from committee, and I'm open to take any questions.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, through the chair, Mr. Visser. A lot of potential benefits of this bill. One that I'm curious about is in terms of energy efficiency and savings, especially in terms of heating costs for consumers, is it possible to quantify what adoption of this might mean in terms of reduced heating expenses compared to a home that, say, didn't meet codes? And I don't know if that modeling has been done through your association. Thank you.
Yes, that modeling is done at the national level. I think the difference between like the 2021 code and the 2024 code is a 5 or 6% increase in energy efficiency. It's been the goal of the International Code Council to get residential building codes to net zero ready by 2030. I think that's a pretty big leap. So I'm not sure. Basically, AHSC is the one that's going to be adopting the code. I think they're on not quite that stringent of a timeline, but there is, you know, anywhere from 5 to 7% increase in energy efficiency on a code cycle basis, which is every 3 years.
Hey, thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bissell, you know, I've sat in this committee a fair number of years, and I've heard a number of bills relating to building codes and fire codes and safety codes and plumbing codes and so forth. Mm-hmm. Could you kind of give us a primer on the different code regimes that operate in Alaska, whether they're national or state-specific or international? I know there's been some conflict in the general industry over international versus U.S. standards. Just kind of educate the committee, if you would, on building codes and the ones that are affecting Alaska.
So I'm really deeply involved in the residential code, which is the IRC. It governs one and two family dwellings and townhouses. There's other codes, the UPC, the IDC. Those are all more commercial codes, and I'm not as deeply involved with those codes. So right now, there's really no residential building code in the state of Alaska unless you're in a jurisdiction that adopts one. So that's really all I can say about that.
So there's no residential building code covering one and two family houses. I can't reconcile that statement with the IRC. What does it stand for? I think I heard you say there's no residential building code covering. I'm not quite sure what I heard you say, actually.
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, there's no state adopted code, which is what this bill would do. Say in Anchorage specifically, the municipality adopts the International Residential Code and creates local amendments. So we do have to build to that. But outside of other jurisdictions, say in Kenai, the Mattsu Valley, they are not governed by any code because their borough does not adopt any.
And which, if I may, if, which code covers the municipality of Anchorage at this point?
We're currently under the 2018 IRC.
And what's IRC stand for, sir?
International Residential Code.
Okay, good deal. Thank you, I think. Okay. Good.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Visser. Next, we have David Bunce. Please put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is David Bunce. I'm owner of Sterling Custom Homes, past president of Kenai Peninsula Builders Association, and current president of Alaska State Home Builders Association. I ask that you pass House Bill 150. The state started the process in the early 90s by requiring residential contractors to take classes and pass a test to get a residential endorsement on their contractor license. Then to keep the license, we need an additional 16 hours of continuing education during the two-year license period. So we are trained and tested on how to build in Alaska's climate, but no requirement to put that training to use. This bill finishes the process of protecting the consumer by requiring a licensed contractor to build to code, which is a minimum standard. It protects the bank from investing in substandard homes, and it actually protects the contractor. This bill does not grow government, and it does not affect anyone that is not a licensed contractor. It uses processes already in place, and it allows for industry professionals in Alaska to have input into code revisions that work for Alaska. Thank you, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Okay. Seeing no other testimony, public testimony on House Bill 150 is now closed. I am setting an amendment deadline for Thursday, April 4th at 2 p.m. Please get any amendments to my committee aid before then if you dare. That concludes our business today. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:04 p.m.